Thanks.
Okay, we've got everybody in and the recording is set. So over to
Good.
you.
Hello, friends. Welcome to this 90th webinar on the Secret Doctrine. This webinar series, as you well know by now, is available on makara.us under the subheading Mori Federation Webinars, then Webinar Series in Progress. All episodes of this, The Secret Teaching of All Ages, and the Treatise on Cosmic Fire series are also available on YouTube. Just do a search for Francis Donald and the webinar series you'd like to view. You can also access any of these webinars on the homepage of Moria Federation in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage will take you to a link. You can come right into the webinar. So if you don't get an invitation, but you suspect that it might be the day for the webinar, just check moriafederation.com and you'll be able to confirm that there's a webinar happening. Okay, this month in old diary leaves, Colonel Olcott describes the last two days in the life of the eminent Indian theosophist T. Subba Rao, pictured here. Oh, could we get a reader for this, please?
I'll start us off.
Great.
On the 3rd of June, I visited T. Subba Rao at his request and mesmerized him. He was in a dreadful state, his body covered with boils and blisters from crown to sole, as the result of blood poisoning from some mysterious cause. He could not find it in anything that he had eaten or drunk, and so concluded that it might be due to the malevolent action of elementals, whose animosity he had aroused by some ceremonies he had performed for the benefit of his wife. This was my own impression, for I felt the uncanny influence about him as soon as I approached. Knowing him for the learned occultist that he was, a person highly appreciated by HPB and the author of a course of superb lectures on the Gita, I was inexpressibly shocked to see him in such a physical state.
Thanks, PL. Yeah, an extraordinary idea, isn't it, that he could be attacked by elementals? Okay, second part of this.
Greg, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Although my mesmeric treatment of him did not save his life, it gave him so much strength that he was able to be moved to another house. And when I saw him 10 days later, he seemed convalescent, the improvement dating, as he told me, from the date of the treatment. The change for the better was, however, only temporary, for he died during the night of the 24th of the same month and was cremated at 9 on the following morning. From members of his family, I obtained some interesting particulars. At noon on the 24th, he told those about him that his guru called him to come. He was going to die. He was now about beginning his tapas, mystical invocations, and he did not wish to be disturbed. From that time on, he spoke to no one.
Yeah, okay. So we began our last session by taking a look at the C section of verse 1 from stanza 7, the last stanza in the first volume of the Secret Doctrine, which states, "The one from the Mother Spirit, Atman, then the spiritual, Atma Buddhi, spiritual soul." Okay. The last few pages of the Secret Doctrine have been comparing the seven divine orders of being as seen through different ancient cultures. We've actually been doing this for a few sessions now, including the Egyptian, the Japanese, the Kabbalistic, the Hindu, Gnostic, and theosophical teachings. In this section of the text, HPB restates these celestial orders, beginning with the highest, which is described in verse 1 as the divine vehicle of sentient formless life. This first order is associated with Yod, with fire, the Chokmah Sephiroth, divine monarch of the central heaven in the Japanese tradition, and Amun-Ra among the Egyptians. It's important to keep in mind that this first order is still a vehicle for the life aspect. Thus, it stands in the position on the Tree of Life, for instance, as Chokmah rather than the undifferentiated Kether. The C section of this text concerns itself with the second order of beings, described by HPB as still formless, but more definitely substantial. Here, the ether of Bina is added to the fire of Chokmah, thus representing a downward Atma Buddhi extension for the monadic plane. Remember, this second order is called Atma Buddhi, spirit soul. And we see it here in theosophical terms, right? We then learned that, quote, in the cosmogony of Japan, when out of the chaotic mass, an egg-like nucleus appears, having within itself the germ and potency of all the universal as well as all terrestrial life. It is the threefold, just named, which differentiates. Of course, the golden egg is not any of these gods, but is the source of these gods, which doesn't appear much in any of the literature that I could find. They really start with this highest of this trinity, rather than with this cosmic egg idea. Next, we took a look at Izanagi and Izanami. I really love this painting and I love this idea, representing the masculine Yo and feminine In, who meet on the bridge between the celestial and terrestrial worlds, and together parent the Great Mother, which gives an idea of how highly placed these are. These would be the primordial parents of, for instance, the Isis style goddess, right? From these primordial three emanate the seven creations, which include the invisible celibate, the spirit or the god of the Raelith's depths, the spirit of the vegetable kingdom, whose dual nature includes the spirit of the earth and the spirit of the sands. Then spirits who were androgynous or dual-sexed, and finally, quote, the seventh spirit, the last emanated from the mother, appears as the first divine human form, distinctly male and female. It was the seventh creation, as in the Puranas, wherein man is the seventh creation of Brahma. We then learned that Izanagi used his Ame no Nuboko, heavenly jeweled spear, to stir the chaotic waters of primordial earth. According to the myth, when he lifted the spear, drops of water fell from its tip and formed the first Japanese island called Onogoroshima. Next, we took a look at the third order of celestial beings, which corresponds to Atmibuddhi Manas, and the third hierarchy called the Triads. And this pretty much takes us up to where we left off last time. Next, we move into the commentary on the E section of the verse, which states the four from the one. Quote, the fourth are substantial entities. This is the highest group among the rupas, atomic forms. It is the nursery of the human conscious spiritual souls. They are called the imperishable jivas and constitute, through the order below their own, the first group of the first septenary host, the great mystery of human conscious and intellectual being. So we'll unpack all of this. So with this E section, we now move into a consideration of the Scorpio-ruled highest hierarchy of the lower quaternary of hierarchies, right? These lower four. So these seven can also be divided into a higher three and a lower four. This is the human hierarchy par excellence, because it is the realm of the human monads, also called the initiates, lords of sacrifice, lords of love, imperishable jivas, and lords of flame. The latter expressive of the element of fire, which is associated with both Tifereth and Manas. The fourth kingdom in nature is the outer expression of this fourth hierarchy, and actually demonstrates through all four of the lower hierarchies. So let's take a closer look at this passage. First, just line by line here, because it's pretty dense. The fourth are substantial entities. This is the highest group among the rupas, atomic forms, meaning that this is the first group to express itself through Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, whose latter permanent atom formed of monastic atomic substance brings in the rupa or form aspect. That's why they're the highest of the rupa types. Next, it is the nursery of the human conscious spiritual souls. So the spiritual triad, as the first form of the monad, notice the dropped triangle here, suggesting that spiritual triad is the form of the threefold monad, is indeed together here the source or nursery of soul expression on the higher monastic subplanes. Right? So if we look at this sentence again, it is the nursery of the human conscious spiritual souls. So yes, indeed, the spiritual, Kama monastic, not Kama monastic, Atma Buddhi Manas is together forms the nursery or the source of the realm of souls, which demonstrates on the highest three subplanes of the mental plane. Okay. Next, it is the they are called the imperishable jivas. Now we're talking here again about the fourth hierarchy, and constitute, through the order below their own, the first group of the first septenary host, the great mystery of human consciousness and intellectual being. Okay, imperishable because they are monadic in essence. The quote-unquote order below their own is the fifth grade of hierarchy, the one we're reading about. This fourth celestial order is related to the fourth creative hierarchy, but they're related to the hierarchy beneath them as the source of the first of seven principles that of a human being, which is the monad, right? And then as a result of the fifth creative hierarchy, comes the development of those, of that highest human principle. Let's see. So let's take a look at DK's comments on the fourth creative hierarchy. And could we get a reader, please?
Ariane, can you read that for us, please?
Hierarchy 4. The fourth creative hierarchy is the group wherein the highest aspect of man, his quote unquote father in heaven, finds place. These lives are the points of fire who must become the flame. This they do through the agency of the fifth hierarchy and the four wicks, or the two dual lower hierarchies. Thus it can be seen that where man is concerned, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh hierarchies are, during the cycle of incarnation, his very self. They are the quote-unquote lords of sacrifice and quote-unquote lords of love, the flower of Atma, Buddhi.
Right, you could say the downward expression of the third principle or the third celestial order, which is characterized by Atma Buddhi and the third hierarchy. So they are the downward flower of that, right? This is a very essential paragraph, but we're going to read another one, a continuation of his comments. Reader, please.
Janet, can you read, please?
Yes. As is stated in the secret doctrine, this hierarchy is a nursery for the incarnating Jesus, and has carried in it the germs of the lives which achieved the human stage in another solar system, but were not able to proceed beyond that only to the coming in of Valhalla, which projected them into a state of latency. The condition of the hierarchy is similar, only on a cosmic scale, to the condition of the seed of human life held in the state of obscuration during an interchain period. The three other hierarchies dealt with, first, second, and third, were those who have in previous kapas or logoic manifestation passed beyond the human stage altogether. They are therefore the rupa, or formless groups, as remaining are the rupa groups of those having forms.
Thank you, Janet. Okay, any questions about this? This is very condensed information, but it's also the best we have on this particular fourth order. I see a hand there.
Barbara, please go ahead.
Yes, I'm wondering about the relationship of the upward to downward hierarchy and the upward moving kingdoms of nature. That's do they intersect? Do they meet? Is it one system or two connecting systems?
Well, you know, we have it here in the fourth hierarchy. We have a direct connection. The fourth hierarchy and the fourth kingdom in nature, right? Interesting to look at the fifth hierarchy in that regard, because the fifth is a dual hierarchy. It includes the souls, very much connected with the Makara and Capricorn, which are the Manasaputras who provide the spark of mind. That's the upper half of this hierarchy. The lower half really is the personality, here it says right here, human personality, which is very much connected with animal man and therefore with the animal kingdom. So you have in reverse order, you see, it's a reverse order. Whereas, you know, this counts 1 through 7, the kingdoms of nature count, this would be the third kingdom, counting from below upwards, right? We normally think of the animal kingdom as the third kingdom and the kingdom of souls as the fifth, right? So interesting, isn't it, that it's in both ways relevant here, because it is the third kingdom from the bottom and is therefore connected to the animal kingdom in that way via animal man, right? And it is also the, in its higher duality, the higher pole, the higher pole of this duality is connected with the fifth kingdom. So interesting number. I'd actually never noticed that before. And so if you look at this counting upward number system, you have a relation to the animal kingdom. And with this downward number system, you have a relationship to the kingdom of souls, or the fifth kingdom in nature. So that's an interesting relation. With four, it works, it's just direct. Right, the human kingdom is directly connected because this is the source of our true selves. Now, I've never explored the idea of looking at the lower kingdoms, for instance, the lunar lords, which are called the greater builders, in relation to the plant kingdom. I'm not sure that it's going to hold at that level. Yeah, that would take, I mean, off the top, you know, I don't see, for instance, that the plant kingdom is ruled by Mars. I see it more as ruled by even numbered planets. That is to say, ray numbered planets. Well, Mars is 6 ray, but I see it more as Neptunian, Venusian, rulerships. I'd have to look, and this information is in Esoteric Psychology 1. Now the lowest, which are the breadbasket of nourishment, these are the little elemental lives that make up the actual etheric forms of our physical beings. And so they are definitely, they're drawn on by this sixth hierarchy to create the forms that in turn form the sheaths of the personality. So all four of these lower kingdoms are involved in humanity, but the lower kingdoms are also involved in the lower form building aspect of the animal, plant, and mineral kingdom. That's about as good as I could do for you, Barbara. I saw a hand go up.
Yes, Tom, please go ahead. Tom, can you unmute yourself now?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got a little bit lost because it says here that this hierarchy is carried in the terms of lives which achieve human stage in another solar systems. We are not those. We are human in this solar system. So who are those germs?
I don't understand your question. Could you state it again?
So in the text it says it this hierarchy.
This text. In this text?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. Carry the germs of life which achieve human stage in another solar system.
Okay. Yeah, very good point. It's the previous version of this solar system, not another concurrent solar system. In other words, not beyond our solar system in the present time, but the first of this series of lives of this solar system, where the personality aspect was initially developed. So that would be the lives which achieved, that would be the lives which achieved the human stage. He should have said a previous solar system. Now, let me read this a moment in with the idea that it could be another solar system. And carried the germs, the lives which achieve the human stage, and we're not able to proceed beyond that. Yeah, it to me, this suggests the previous solar system, but because of the phrase, we're not able to proceed beyond that owing to the coming Pralaya, which was between that solar system that came between that Pralaya, sorry, that came between solar systems. So they reached the acme of progress in the previous solar system, but were not able to move into the fifth kingdom because of the Pralaya, which was that universal time of rest and reimmersion in spirit between the two solar systems. Does that make sense? Tom, did you get that?
I understood that it's the previous, but because I have thought the fourth is us who individualized in this solar system, but this says the fourth are those who individualized in the previous solar systems. So that's where I get mixed.
Yeah. And it carried in it the germs of the lives which achieved human stage in other solar systems. This suggests to me that those who are consciously aware at monadic levels in this hierarchy. We are all in our true selves and our essence, members of this hierarchy, but it has to do with our conscious awareness. And what he may mean here is that those who are consciously aware at this fourth hierarchical stage of consciousness, that group achieved the human stage, which would be represented by the lower three hierarchies, in another solar system. That's what I'm reading this to mean.
Yeah. So we are also part of that hierarchy, but we were not.
Potentially. Right. Yeah. It's very mysterious. You know, it's very much like the whole true self idea. You know, it's like we're identified with personality, but that's not who we are. Well, ultimately, we're not even the soul, we are monad, right? But I think in terms of hierarchical participation, it has to do with consciousness, because ultimately we belong to the fourth, but at this point in time and space, our consciousness is participating in the fifth hierarchy. That's how I read it. Okay, good questions, Tom. Thanks. Anyone else? Okay. Okay, so next up we have, for the latter are the field wherein lies concealed in its privation, the germ that will fall into generation. So the latter, being the fifth hierarchy. Its privation refers to the germ's privation, the germ being that energetically negative aspect of the fifth hierarchy that must descend into the lower quaternary, the realm of illusion, resulting in personality expression. You get that? So now with that, explanation, if we read this again, for the latter are the field wherein lies concealed in its privation, the germ that will fall into generation. So at the level of the soul, that the germ is in privation and it's negatively polarized. And therefore it must fall into generation. Okay, and then finally, yeah. That germ will become the spiritual potency in the physical cell that guides the development of the embryo and which is the cause of the hereditary transmission of faculties and all the inherent qualities in man. So, you know, these two sentences go together. What was the energetically negative privation at the level of the soul becomes, as the imprisoned soul, the positive spiritual potency within the incarnated form, who, through the law of attraction, seeks its true self on its own plane. So it was as the, you know, as the germ in its privation, it was negatively polarized and therefore energetically negative. It was drawn down into the incarnated form, at which point it becomes a spiritual potency, a positively polarized germ, as it were. It's because it characterizes the imprisoned soul, which now seeks to return to its true place on the higher, on the plane of the soul. Guides the development of the embryo, brings to mind the Christ in the womb of the mother of Mother Virgo. And you can couch all of this in terms of that Virgoan process. The hereditary transmission of faculties and all the inherent qualities in man suggests those qualities stored in the three permanent atoms, which are part of the causal body. Let's take a look at DK's thoughts on the fifth hierarchy. Could we get a reader, please?
Got.
Yes. Hierarchy five. The fifth creative hierarchy is, as we know from study of the secret doctrine, a most mysterious one. This mystery is incident upon the relation of the fifth hierarchy to the five liberated groups. This relation in connection with our particular planet, which is not a sacred planet, can be somewhat understood if the history of the Buddha and his work is contemplated. This is hinted at in the third volume of the Secret Doctrine. The relation of the fifth hierarchy to a certain constellation has also a bearing upon this mystery. This is hidden in the karma of the solar logos and concerns his relationship to another solar logos and the interplay of force between them in a great mahakalpa. This is the true secret of the dragon, and it was the dragon influence or the serpent energy which caused the influx of manasic or mind energy into the solar system. Entangled closely with the karma of these two cosmic entities was that of the lesser cosmic entity, who is the life of our planet, the planetary logos.
Okay, this is very obtuse information, and raises as many questions as it answers. In fact, raises more questions than it answers in terms of the nature of the fifth hierarchy. But here, all of this information is related to the higher aspect. The idea of manas is very important here, because it's really through this hierarchy that the spark of mind became available to the to animal man. And as a result of the implanting of that spark, a fourth hierarchy was created out of a combination of the fifth hierarchy related to this aspect of this, and the fifth kingdom You know, that's also very much related to this group. And the third hierarchy. So the fourth is really a product and continues to be a product of the combination of those two kingdoms in nature, right? Of the fifth and third kingdoms in nature. And, you know, he here gets into this quality of the the relationship between the solar logos and the great lord of the constellational lord of Capricorn, you know, and doesn't give us any more, which doesn't really reveal much, except for that the secret of this hierarchy is related to that. And is also related to the secret of the dragon that brings in the idea of the Draco influence and the serpent energy, which has to do with Kundalini, which, you know, we've been studying in a treatise on cosmic fire, and that's very dependent on the mental chakras, right? It's really, it's the mental chakras that make possible the rising of the Kundalini. So all of that's interrelated. There's a very strong connection between the whole mythology of the dragon and higher mind. Let's see what else. Yeah, and that these Capricorn and the solar logos is very much connected with the life of the planetary logos. Okay, clear as mud, right? Yeah. It's, we could read about it, but it's not like we really penetrate the mystery. But let's continue. Reader, please.
Rudy, can you read that for us, please?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It was this triple karma which brought in the serpent religion and the serpent or dragons of wisdom. In Lemurian days, it had to do with solar and planetary kundalini, or serpent fire. A hint lies in the fact that the constellation of the dragon has the same relation to the one greater than our logos, as the center at the base of the spine has to a human being. It concerns stimulation and vitalization with a consequent coordination of the manifesting fires. A clue to the mystery lies also in the relation of this fifth group to the two contracting poles. They are the fivefold links, the benign uniters, and the producers of the atonement. Esoterically, they are the saviors of the race, and from them emanates that principle which, in conjunction with the highest aspect, lifts the lower aspect up to heaven.
Thank you. Okay, we'll just unpack it a little bit. You know, there's a lot here. So the triple karma is between the solar logos, this constellational logos of Capricorn, and our planetary logos. And that brought in the serpent religion, which would have to do with, as part of its doctrine, would be the raising, both the raising of the Kundalini and the stimulation of mind, which, by the way, are not unrelated. And the serpents or dragons of wisdom, those are masters of wisdom. You can see this whole concept of wisdom and serpents and Capricorn, crocodiles, Makara, are all deeply interrelated. So this happened in Lemurian days, had to do with solar and planetary Kundalini. That would be specifically, by the way, our planet. And I'm having an insight here that I haven't had before, which is that, you know, our planetary logos is, well, three globes in the fourth chain of our planet, which we are currently in, the Mars, Mercury, and Earth globes together form the Kundalini of the solar logos. Extraordinary fact that's given us in Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So you can see how it would have to do with you know, that serpents or dragons of wisdom would find a particular place here on our planet. And then it gives us more information. A hint lies the fact that the constellation of the dragon, that's Draco, has the same relation to the one greater than our logos. Okay, that could be the, you talk about solar logos, so that could be the seven solar systems of which ours is a part, the logos of the seven solar systems of which ours is a part. So the consul Draco has a relationship to that cosmic logoi, as the center at the base of the spine has to a human being. So that meaning that the constellation Draco is the center in the base of the spine of either those seven, the logos of those seven solar systems, of which ours is one, or the octave above that, which would be the one about whom not may be said. I don't have a clear sense of which is more likely. I think it's totally possible that Draco, you know, is important enough to be the base of the spine center in the one about whom not may be said, but you know, it's not, he just says relation to the one greater than the logos. So is that the one immediately above the logos, or, you know, beyond that in terms of the one about whom not may be said? It concerns stimulation and vitalization with a consequent coordination of the manifesting fires. So all of this has to do with cosmic Kundalini and the impact of that whole cosmic system on our planet, resulting in dragons of wisdom manifesting on our planet. You know, logoi themselves are called dragons of wisdom. You know, greater, you have greater and lesser dragons of wisdom. And see, I mean, fifth group, a clue to the
you got it.
Yeah, I know, but I'll finish here.
Okay.
Clue to the mystery lies also in the relation of this fifth group to the two. Okay, so this is, you know, a change of subject. The two contracting poles, it refers to this fifth hierarchy. It's a dual hierarchy, which are, notice, both human personality and the perfect ones. So you have, you know, they're considered as one, the souls and the personality extensions of those souls, right? And they are contracting because they're moving towards each other in this time of evolution. Yeah, and then he goes on to describe them more. We're not going to get into that. As the saviors of the race, of course, the Manasaputras in their act of sacrifice, in a sense, guaranteed that the human race would be saved. Yeah, and they lift the lower aspect, the personality aspect, to heaven. Okay, questions?
Well, Ariane, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm totally lost. I somehow feel like this chart should be three-dimensional. I'm not sure why, but so reading it from the top, these are the kingdoms, like, you know, the mineral, vegetable, animal, and then the fourth kingdom being the human kingdom. Is this what we're talking about here?
No, we're talking about creative hierarchies, which is a whole system of it's the seven aspects of life as they are manifested in this solar system. And so the you have the atomic lives or the elemental lives that make up the forms. Those, that's the seventh. The sixth hierarchy uses those lives to build the form world. The fifth hierarchy at the lower level, the personality lives, uses congeries of these of lunar lords to create the sheaths, the personality sheaths. The higher aspect of this is the soul aspect, drawing us forward. And then finally you get to the fourth or monadic hierarchy that draws the soul life up into it on the evolutionary cycle. I'm not going to go above that. These are higher than human lives and existences that relate to the first three cosmic orders that we've been discussing. They're super cosmic. I mean, they're super human in every sense of the word. And it's from them that the principles of the human being comes. They don't have a direct, they're not the kingdoms in nature.
I see. So they're like creative impulses. Do they have uniqueness, like unique identities, these creative forces?
Yes, they do.
But I mean, per category or individually?
Depending on where you, which ones you're looking at. You know, you could say from one point of view, there is always a discrete life that belongs to any kingdom. You know, there is a life, but there's no awareness. There's no self-awareness until the fifth hierarchy. And from that point up, there is discrete individual awareness. However, what composes that individuality changes. It becomes group. You know, at the level of solar angels, they are group conscious. And that's their orientation, is group consciousness, right? And then that continues to expand, to become more and more inclusive as you go up. But in terms of individual consciousness, yes, everything from the fifth up has individual consciousness.
Okay, and then just two quick questions. So Scorpio is associated with like human, this human stage or human realm.
Why is monadic stage? Monadic stage.
Oh, so this is higher than human personality or individuality. How, tell me a little bit about that, and then I have one last question. Excuse me.
Okay. All right. Just in terms of human principles, and that's. That's all we'll go with this, because there's so many ways to study these hierarchies. There's about 30 pages in the beginning of Esoteric Astrology that goes into these in depth, and it could be quite bewildering at the first read. But anyway, just in terms of principles, you have the monadic level of awareness demonstrating through the fourth creative hierarchy. You have the solar awareness demonstrating through the higher pole of the fifth creative hierarchy. That's the soul aspect. You have the personality of a human being demonstrating through the lower pole of the fifth creative hierarchy. And then you get into the form aspect. So the sixth are the congeries of form that form the sheaths, which are the bodies of the mental, astral, and physical bodies of a human being, that includes the etheric. And then you have the little tiny elemental beings, which are drawn on by the greater builders that form those sheaths. Okay. So that's a quick overview.
And that image, Quetzalcoatl, you know, that has like the tail of a serpent and the head of a bird. Is it symbolizing something from this chart? No.
He would belong to one of these. He, it, whatever it is, would certainly belong to one of these hierarchies. It's an incarnating god. Therefore, it would be an avatar of a Mayan avatar. He's not discussed by DK, so we can't put him in relation to, for instance, the Buddha or the Christ. I would think he's at a fifth/sixth initiate, certainly by now, a sixth initiate that came as the savior of that race at that time. And if you read about it, it's striking material. But so I would put it, you know, at the level of one who is self-realized, which is an awareness, a combination of the fourth and fifth hierarchies. You know, the dragon is, I mean, just think about how much that dragon imagery that was so prevalent among the Mayans fits into DK's description here, right? Of the dragon energy, the planetary kundalini, that type of thing. Okay, another question?
Yes, Greg, go ahead, please.
Okay, I hope I don't throw this all into chaos, but one of the most interesting things is, even though this is in reflection of the seven creative hierarchies of the second solar system, we are also, I think we are working through the third solar system, and this is from a previous cycle on the Earth chain, which would probably put it into the lunar chain, the moon chain of the Earth chain. But then when you go further forth, or the Earth scheme, the moon chain of the Earth scheme, when you go further forward into this concept that we are bound and we meet at this point in the fourth hierarchy, which is in a sense the balancing of the lower physical creative hierarchies and the higher as we transpire and purify ourselves in preparation for the fifth creative hierarchy that's coming through. Now, that's only one aspect of it, and I think that may be already too much, what I've just said.
Well,
because
let's stop there for a little bit. So, yes, there is a reflection between the last solar system, what you call the third solar system, and the numbers could be deceptive, because is it, you know, the third, is it the third to manifest, and that would be the coming solar system, or is it the third in terms of the conditioning agent, which would be the third aspect, the third ray, that would be the previous solar system, or the first solar system. So those numbers have to be conditioned. There's definitely a relationship between that and the moon chain, representing the final stage in the conditioning of the form aspect in this chain. Right. So, and you know, the number three of the, it was because it was the third chain, where the moon was the globe D, or the earth of that chain, was all about developing the form, bringing the form aspect so that it could be a fit vehicle for the soul to overshadow. And that would happen in the fourth chain, in the fourth globe, in the end of the third root race, which you could say is a recapitulation of the previous solar system, all of that was, and that what's occurring now is is the agenda of this second solar system manifesting, right? Even though we haven't yet restored the plan on Earth, which we hope to do in the Aquarian age, which will then really seal the door on the previous solar system,
right,
quote unquote, right, where evil dwells. But that's okay. Thanks, Greg.
And then in response to that, I'm thinking that the Venus is, I mean, we talked, I mean, she talks here about the emergence of a greater logos, and can we then make an association that Venus is that greater logos because she's sacred and that we are not yet?
She is, and you know, it's our alter ego, you know. But the greater logos here is talking about the solar logos. So one that is greater than our logos is the solar logos. That's not our planetary logos. That would be a natural conclusion, you know, if you made this the planetary logos. But what sets it in the proper framework is the idea of Draco coming in here, and that seals the fact that it's a cosmic association, not a planetary. Okay, anyone else? Any thoughts? Okay.
We got some comments here. Let me look at them.
Okay.
Magda says, in this Vitae's schema, we are seeing hierarchies tell Tiferet virtues, alias the Elohim, or spirits of form, or Yahweh. And there, you've opened up her attachment.
Yeah. It's hard for me to, let me see if I can copy this. And then.
Magda, would you like to unmute so you can talk about that, or was that all you wanted to say?
That didn't work. Okay. So, I was hoping to copy paste it in there, but it didn't want to do that. So, I'm not going to be able to address that too well anyway, because I would love to, I really would love to know the
I got the microphone open, and I just put this in order for us to maybe understand this difficult scheme by decay that we always see. And I think the first three realms are from the fourth one on, we are in the angels realm, and then the archangels, and then the archai. And the Tiferet, you know, in Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, you have the Tiferet Sephirah, which is the central sun. And that, those are the spirits of form, the creators, the builders. And so it's just to put in perspective, because I never understood what this means, this scheme. And it's a parallel with the angelic hierarchies. And in this solar logos, I'm learning then, if this all is true, then we are studying in this solar logos, we are, can learn to be, to kind of, we are the possibility to get, to become to the level of Tiferet. So to the level of a builder, of a constructor.
Yeah, it would be, I've made some attempt to link the Sephirah to these kingdoms. It's not pure, it's not completely satisfactory, but—
Okay.
There are some that, you know, like you say, Tiferet and this fifth kingdom are definitely connected. You have to remember that these seven hierarchies include both the Devic and the human line of becoming. You know, for instance, the elemental lives at this lower level are pure, strictly speaking, least developed or lowest aspect of the Devic kingdom, right? Which then, this is a place of connection, which form the atomic structure of the forms of a human being, you know, as well as the other kingdoms in nature. And there are other parallels all through these hierarchies. You know, there's, in other words, there's Devic equivalents all the way along here. They're not described by DK, but we can, you know, we can speculate as to their nature. You know, once you get to the level, for instance, of the human hierarchy, this fourth hierarchy, you know, in terms of conscious awareness on this, you're looking at six initiates. That's, you know, the return to the Father's house. That's monadic awareness. That's sixth initiation. Well, there's Also with the sixth initiation, we merge with the Deva kingdom. Those initiates merge with a great Deva Lord who is equal in consciousness to them and become and unify the two kingdoms, right? So there is no real separation. There's a polarity that exists coming up to that sixth initiation, and then it re-emerges on their way to participation in these higher hierarchies, which, and if you're interested, it's a fascinating read. Here's one from EA 39, 36. Yeah, all in the 30s pages of Esoteric Astrology is a description of these hierarchies, and it's truly an interesting read. Anyone else? Okay.
That's all I see for right now.
Okay, we're going to go ahead. I don't mind having spent so much time on this because this really is where we are in terms of our understanding. I mean, it's one thing to, get some sense of the highest three orders of sacred beings and how they manifest through the different cultures. But when we get down to this fourth and fifth, we're really looking at the nature of that which we are attempting to align ourselves with. Okay. All righty. So this whole section is particularly significant in the SD. It's one of those, a red line sections. Okay, let's take a quick look at the two footnotes. The first reference by the term rupas, atomic forms. Can we get a reader, please?
Tom, can you read that for us, please? Hold on, let me unmute you. Oops. There we go. There, Tom. Can you read that?
It is worthy of notice that while rejecting as a superstition of occultism and religion too, the theory of substantial and invisible beings called angels, elementals, etc., without, of course, having ever looked into the philosophy of these incorporeal entities or through over them, modern chemistry, owing to observation and discovery, should have unconsciously being forced to adopt and recognize the same ratio of progression and order in the evolution of chemical atoms as occultism does, both for its duanis and atoms, and analogy being the first law. As seen above, the very first group of the rupa angels is quaternary, an element being added to each in descending order. So are the atoms adopting the phraseology of chemistry, monatomic, diatomic, and tetratomic, progressing downwards. Let it be remembered that fire, water, and air, or the elements of primary creation, so-called, are not the compound elements they are on Earth, but noumenal homogeneous elements, the spirits thereof.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, first, it is worthy of notice that while rejecting as a superstition of occultism and religion too, the theory of substantial and invisible beings called angels, elementals, etc., without, of course, having ever looked into the philosophy of these incorporeal entities or thought over them, modern chemistry, owing to to observation and discovery, should have unconsciously been forced to adopt and recognize the same ratio of progression and order in the evolution of chemical atoms as occultism does, both for its dionys and atoms, analogy being its first law. What a mind she had. Okay. So based as it is on measurable physical plane phenomena, it's no surprise that modern chemistry, in fact, I think this whole thing was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that modern chemistry or any of the other sciences for that matter rejects what is called the superstition of occultism and religion. HBB's second point is more interesting, which is that visible chemical atoms have the same ratio of progression and evolutionary order as quote unquote Dianes and occult atoms, meaning that the invisible world is bound by the same laws as the visible world. They're just a higher octave of the visible world, but hold to the same laws. And thus these laws are wielded by the builders of occult atoms, just as they are by the builders of the forms of the lower quaternary. Also the phrase, having ever looked into the philosophy of these incorporeal entities, suggests that the ageless wisdom both knows and has recorded these occult properties. For example, through the tenets of alchemy. Okay, a little bit dense, but we get the gist of it, which is that there is a unified law that affects both the invisible and yet form aspect, as well as the visible form aspect. Next, as seen above, the very first group of the Rupa angels is quaternary, an element being added to each in descending order. It's interesting. So the descending order of elements according to the downward progression of the sephira is fire, ether, water, and air, though modern theosophy reverses the last two, the water and air part. As a continuation of the teaching so far given, the first group of Rupa angels are found on the higher mental plane and are expressive of Atma Buddhi Manas. This reflects the systemic perspective on the division of Rupa and Arupa, which draws the Arupa-Rupa dividing line between the cosmic dense and the cosmic etheric. But from a cosmic perspective, all devas connected with the cosmic physical plane are categorized as rupa, as having form. Next, so are the atoms, adopting the phraseology of chemistry, monoatomic, diatomic, and tetratomic, progressing downwards. So HPB here suggests that descending levels of rupa angels follow the same nomenclature as the increasing complexity of atomic structure. This really is at the heart of this whole footnote here, right? That descending levels, I'll say it again, of rupa angels, that's form-based angels, follows the same nomenclature as the increasing complexity of atomic structure, therefore drawing a parallel, for example, between the first group of Rupa angels and elements, first group of Rupa angels and elements that consist of one atom, like helium and neon. So making the point that these exist within the measurable physical structure very much as the first level of Rupa angels exist in relation to the cosmic physical plane. They would be the highest levels of the mental plane angels, these Rupa plane. It would be literally the first subplane of the mental plane would be the highest level of Rupa angels. And you could say has therefore a relationship with these monatomic is the technical word, monatomic atoms of substance. Okay. Finally, Let it be remembered that fire, water, and air, or the elements of primary creation, so-called, are not the compound elements they are on Earth, but noumenal homogeneous elements, the spirits thereof. This is very important. I think we've come across this often enough to recognize the distinction, right? When they're talking about water, for instance, it's not H2O. It's not that those the physical demonstration of water, you know, or that complex soup of elements that we call air. That is not what's being described. You know, it is rather the living entities that demonstrate through these noumenal elements. You could say that their vibratory quality demonstrates as these noumenal elements. Okay. Any thoughts or questions? A bit dense, as sometimes her footnotes are. Okay, let's continue with the footnote, referenced by the phrase the rupas, atomic forms. Could we get a reader, please?
Yes, Anne Veronica. Oops, I guess we lost Anne Veronica. Barbara, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Then follows the secondary groups or host placed on parallel lines in a diagram with atoms. The natures of those beings would be seen to correspond in their downward scale progression to composite elements in a mathematically identical manner as to analogy. This refers, of course, only to diagrams made by the occultists, for were the scale of angelic beings to be placed on a parallel line with the scale of the chemical atoms of science, from the hypothetical helium down to uranium, they would, of course, be found to differ. For these have, as correspondents on the astral plane, only the four lowest orders. The higher three principles in the atom, or rather molecule or chemical element, being perceptible only to the initiated Dhammas eye. But then if chemistry desired to find itself on the right path, it would have to correct its tabular arrangement by that of the occultist, which it may refuse to do. In esoteric philosophy, very physical particle corresponds to and depends on its higher noumenon, the being to whose essence it belongs and above is below. The spiritual evolves from the divine, the psychomedical mental from the spiritual, tainted from its lower plane by the astral. The whole animate and seemingly inanimate nature evolving on parallel lines and drawing its attributes from above as well as from below.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, we will make sense of this. First, then follow the septenary groups or hosts placed on parallel lines in a diagram with atoms. The natures of those beings would be seen to correspond in their downward scale of progression to composite elements in a mathematically identical matter as to analogy. So, you know, forget the technical language here and just realize that she's telling us that the invisible worlds, which includes atomic structure, and the nature of those beings who make up that invisible atomic structure corresponds, and their composite elements on unseen, you know, in the unseen worlds, mathematically identically to the visible world. It's really an astonishing revelation here. So it's quite possible that HBB was, by means of her inner vision, actually looking at the chart she here describes, with one column illustrating the increasing mathematical and geometrical complexity of the quote septenary groups or hosts, and the other column illustrating the quote downward scale of progression of composite elements, right? The mathematical identicality, not similarity, you know, it really strikes me, you know, that it's that there's this identicality of these two columns comes as no surprise given the fact that scientifically recognized elements are actually made up of beings from the elemental kingdom, which are downward reflections of their higher source. So naturally, they would be mathematically identical. Any thoughts or questions? Are you getting the gist of this? Okay, next. This refers, of course, only to diagrams. Maybe this is you know, see if you could pick up on her subtle humor here. You know, this refers only, of course, to diagrams made by the occultists. For were the scale of angelic beings to be placed on a parallel line with the scale of the chemical atoms of science, from the hypothetical helium down to uranium, they would have, of course, be found to differ. This suggests that the occult mathematical qualities of the quote unquote chemical atoms of science differ from those recognized by science. In other words, it comes from their occult vision reveals the truth exactly as it is, right? And the whereas science is moving towards the truth through experiment, right? So, in fact, only a very high, probably fifth ray initiate would possess the clarity of inner vision that could accurately see the occult mathematical properties of both the angelic kingdoms and of chemical atoms. Second, there have been fundamental changes in what science knows about atoms since HBB's time. For example, electrons were discovered in 1897. That's 9 years after The Secret Doctrine was published, and protons in 1917. So it was a pretty rudimentary understanding of atomic structure in when the SD was written. A clairvoyant occultist like HBB would have seen these aspects before they were discovered by scientists, as well as other energetic aspects still unrecognized by science. So, you know, no wonder she said that they would, of course, be found to differ. Okay, next up. For these have, as correspondents on the astral plane, only the four lowest orders, the higher three principles in the atom, or rather molecule or chemical element, being perceptible only to the initiated Dangma's eye. Well, I would think you'd also have to be pretty far along even to see the lower four, but be that as it may. So keep in mind that the term astral plane for first generation theosophists meant the lower invisible planes rather than specifically the sixth subplane of the cosmic physical plane. The revelation here is that just like all other atoms, the quote unquote molecules or chemical elements also have three higher principles, which are only visible to initiates with cosmic etheric vision. FYI, the term dangma, used in stanza 1, verse 1, in reference to the third eye, is a Tibetan word that means purified soul. Next. But then, if chemistry desired to find itself on the right path, it would have to correct its tabular arrangement by that of the occultness, which it may refuse to do. Yes, I would imagine so. The right path would require, just for starters, physical etheric vision, which would further reveal the energetic dynamics of an atom of substance. Higher vision than this would reveal the life aspect, that higher triplicity, as well as which Devic groups such an atom belongs to. I mean, really, when we're looking at a physical atom of substance, even with modern scientific understanding, it really is just the downward tip of the iceberg. Next. In esoteric philosophy, every physical particle corresponds to and depends on its higher noumenon. That's why it has mathematical identicality, the being to whose essence it belongs. So through their outer structure, physical particles mirror the inner mathematical and geometrical qualities of their higher counterparts. Next. And above as below, the spiritual evolves from the divine, the psychomental from the spiritual. The spiritual, as in spiritual triad, is the form aspect of the divine, just as the soul, here called the psychomental, is the form aspect of the spiritual triad, and just as the particle of substance is the form aspect of its etheric elemental source. Finally, tainted from its lower plane by the astral, the whole animate and seemingly inanimate nature, evolving on parallel lines and drawing its attributes from above as well as from below. So at every level of an atom's life, whether it be an atom of substance, a human being, a planetary or solar logos, each of its septenary principles draws on those principles that stand adjacent to it, both from above and from below. Thus, the jiva in physical incarnation is conditioned by both astral and mental substance, and the soul, through its connection with the indweller, is likewise conditioned by this relationship as well as by the spiritual triad. Okay, any thoughts or questions about this lengthy footnote on higher and lower atomic substance? That just leave you stultified and bleary-eyed? Hopefully you got a little idea of what's going on. I see a hand.
Yes, I just wanted to say this is a very detailed description of what's going on, but to me, it's a very good description of as below, so above, or as above, so below. So I thought that was important.
Yeah, you know, there's a fairly simple root concept that runs through this whole footnote. Right, which is the parallelism of these, of the structural quality of the higher and the lower. You know, that's, I thought that was an important detail. Okay, and I saw another hand.
Yeah, Barbara. Barbara, please go ahead.
Yes, I'm just wondering, scientists are beginning to describe atoms more as bundles of information and, energy actors that are able to operate non-locally, I wonder if they're getting into somewhat of the higher principles of the atom.
Yeah, it seems to me they're piercing the veil on that, you know. In fact, I would say that this, the envelope that physics is now experiencing, you know, the outer edge of their exploration really is one of piercing into the noumenal, the source of the outer demonstration of an atom. And as you say, these ideas that you describe would normally seem to characterize the nominal levels of these atoms rather than the outer. But that's where the discovery is leading. So yes, I think you're exactly right. Anyone else? Okay, one more shorter footnote. This one's referenced by the word septenary. So you can see on the left here, it's much shorter. Could we get a reader, please?
Yes. Shirley, can you read that for us, please? Let me see if I can get down to your name so I can. There we go. Can you unmute yourself now?
Yes. The number seven does not imply only seven entities, but seven groups of hosts, as explained before. The highest group, the Asuras, born in Brahma's first body, which turned into night, are septenary, i.e. divided like the Pitris into seven classes, three of which are Arupa, bodiless, and four with bodies. See Vishnu Purana, Book 1. They are in fact more truly or Pitris ancestors than the Pitris who projected the first physical man. See Book 2.
Thank you. Yeah. Now first, did you have something to say? Okay, first, the number seven does not imply only seven entities, but seven groups or hosts, as explained before. So all individual and group entities manifest through seven principles, three arupa and or formless shes, and four rupa or form bodies. Now, this general chart, now this is first generation theosophy, there would be something similar for DK theosophy. But this can also describe for instance, the nature of the planetary logos, in which every one of these what are called egos, divine ego, spiritual ego, higher human ego, etc., would be made up of very large groups of beings, right? So there's this septenary within septenary within septenary idea around this. Okay. Next, the highest group, the Asuras, born in Brahma's first body, which turned into night, are septenary, that is, divided like the Pitris into seven classes, three of which are Arupa, bodiless, and four with bodies. See Vishnu Purana, Book 1. So this highest sevenfold group of Asuras are the primordial Dhyani Chohans, right? This passage illustrates their identicality with both the Babylonian and the informing gods of Egypt. But we're going to pull the plug here because it's kind of enters into a new territory. So we'll pick up here next time. Do you have info on dates, PL?
Yes. So the next treatise on cosmic fire is going to be at 7 p.m. on the 27th of June. God willing, and the creek don't rise. The next secret teaching of all ages will be the 6th of July at 7 p.m. And the next secret doctrine will be the 20th of July at 7 p.m. GMT.
Okay, what about STOA?
Didn't I say STOA at 6th July?
Did you? I'm sorry. Yeah, you probably did. I was multitasking here. I'm trying to find this. Chat. I'm going to put document in the chat, which is an invitation. Let me find it here, which is an invitation for a special webinar that I'll be giving on July 5th, which is a Saturday, early in the morning in the United States. It's it'd be 7 a.m. Pacific, 8, 9, 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's 4 p.m. GMT. And here, let me put it in there. Okay, here we go. All right, so let me open that so you can see it here. Oh, first of all, I have to send it to.
Yeah, you have to hit send because I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's there now. So
there you go.
You can see it. Here it is on screen. So I during the as the Rayology pre-conference last month, we had to cut out two of my presentations because of time constraints. We just ran out of time. And so I will be presenting those. Actually, I'm responding to a request from a group of Greek students as well as Vietnamese students, but it's going to be open to all. The link is here. And it will be a presentation. The first is not mentioned here, which is about a 20-minute presentation on the nature of the cross in history. But then the main part of this presentation will be the technique of fusion, which BL did a wonderful presentation on. And I will give a presentation from a different angle on that, based on DK's text on this technique. And so it'd be terrific if you would like to show up. If you live in the States, it'll be in the morning. In Europe, it'll be in the afternoon or evening. So yeah, download that or copy paste it if you're interested. And that's it for me. Thank you. I will see you next time. Any other last comments?
No other than thank you very much.
Okay.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next time, whatever venue that's going to be.
Okay.